reducing the stigma around mental illness and tackling the opioid epidemic. Those two things go hand in hand. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live on the radio at 9. Also, make sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Just ahead, we'll tell you about Jacksonville's new ReMind initiative to improve our community's mental health during May, this Mental Health Awareness Month. You can get on the line right now. Join us at 549-2937. Then later, it's our movable feast on the show as we click over to the new website, Totally St. Augustine. Plus, commemorating the life and legacy of the late Walter Whetstone and his incredible creation, La Villa's Whetstonian. We'll tell you about that, all of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, addiction, the opiate epidemic, and mental health. These issues are all intertwined, and they are the focus of a new initiative in Jacksonville. It's called ReMind, and it was inspired by the 2014 JCCI Mental Health Task Force. That group found 20 to 25% of adults have experienced a mental illness in any given year, one in four, but the majority go undiagnosed and untreated. And so much of that is due to difficulties accessing care and also stigma around mental illness. Now, May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and as we talk about mental health, we're also talking about this state's and this nation's opiate crisis. Just the other day, Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi filed suit against the nation's largest drug makers and distributors. There is so much to talk about when we look at this topic. So we're pleased to welcome Marion Tischler. She's with ReMind Jax, and she joins us now in studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
So good to have you on the show. And here's our question to callers. What are your thoughts about Mental Health Awareness Month, reducing the stigma around mental health treatment and mental illness, and also how this ties into our opiate crisis? Give us a call at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online. Send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And we also welcome your comments on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. So, Marion, tell me about how this began. This new initiative was inspired by a task force a few years ago in Jacksonville. Is that right?
Correct. During the JCCI Mental Health Task Force, many panels were presented, and one specifically focused on what the faith-based community could do. There was a program called Caring Congregations, and it had many elements to it. Much of it involved education, welcoming congregants, and so forth. We adopted some of that thinking into introducing a program at the Jacksonville Jewish Center. And since that time, the center has been offering speaking panels, discussion groups, art exhibits, crafts, and book readings to focus on various aspects of mental illness and mental wellness.
And this is being done through the JCA on San Jose Boulevard, but this and other location, the Jewish Center, rather.
Right.
But the whole idea is to bring the faith-based community in to this issue.
That's correct.
Right.
Our programs have been offered free to the community, and we have always extended the invitation to the behavioral health community to get the word out about it, as well as the broad areas of our community. And we are very grateful that you're giving us this opportunity to get the word out even more broadly this year.
It's incredible when you think about the fact that 25% of adults and children, too, in the U.S. Have a mental illness in any given year, 50% over a lifetime. So that's nearly half of all Americans are dealing with this, but they're not often diagnosed or treated properly. And that, I'm sure, extends to your congregation that you're working with.
And
any congregation.
Exactly. And this year, for the first time, we're focusing on the area of substance abuse and addiction, which often go hand in hand with many conditions related to mental illness. I wanted to clarify a couple terms. One term is that opiates refers to the drugs that are derived from morphine and heroin, which are directly derived from the opiate poppy. But other drugs are also derived indirectly from or synthesized. And so this is a broader description of the area that affects or has the effect of morphine. And so morphine and heroin are opioids, and we're talking about a broader spectrum and how people become addicted, and specifically what's going to be available in our community to help those that have these kinds of issues.
549-2937, and this morning we're talking about how the opioid epidemic in this country and a crisis around mental health go hand in hand. What are your thoughts and comments? Give us a call at 549-2937. Now, when we talk about mental illness and when we talk about the opioid addiction crisis, in both cases, there's a lot of overlap. People are stigmatized. There's a shortage of mental health and addiction professionals to help people. The system of care is fragmented to non-existent in many areas. There's not enough funding to help people that need it. Just yesterday, the president of the American Medical Association was on this program talking about some of these issues. And so the nation's physicians are actually meeting in Jacksonville this week to try to get their arms around this, too. So we see all of these efforts to try to address this, Marion, the faith community, the medical community, the nonprofit community. Often, though, it seems like people are working in silos, doing the best they can to address this overwhelming problem. And what are the biggest challenges you are seeing as you begin this initiative, Remind?
Well, I think we want to bring the message directly to the people that are experiencing mental health. That can be families, parents, children. We want to bring the message to them that it's their role. Each and every one of the people, whether they have a mental illness or not, it's their role to be accepting, to engage in conversations, to change attitudes about welcoming people, about having a community that is accepting and respectful and kind, and to know how to have conversations that are supportive, and to be aware that we have people around us that because they may have a mental health issue, they need support too, just like you might support anybody who has a physical condition. Mm-hmm. If they need transportation to a doctor, if they need referral services to find good professionals, those are the things that we want each individual to have responsibility and to help communicate to others.
And also, I think understanding that not only is mental illness a disease like a physical disease, addiction is a disease. And often people who are addicts might also have a mental health issue, and they might be self-medicating as a way to try to cope.
Well, what's really important, and one of the messages in what we're doing, is to understand is to appreciate the fact that it is estimated that over 7% of people 12 and over misuse prescription drugs in the past, and they could be drugs such as opiate. Pain relievers. They can be tranquilizers, stimulants, and sedatives. Any of these types of drugs can become addictive. And people with mental illness are three times more likely to misuse prescription drugs. Mm-hmm. Drug misuse is when people use prescription drugs that are not intended for them or use prescriptions in a way that is different or in how the doctor intended, either larger amounts or taking it more often, using it for longer than prescribed. So we want people to walk away with a message of understanding the human condition of being addicted, and then understanding that here in Jacksonville, we have a distinguished panel that's going to be talking about the kinds of services and, first kind of outlining the problem areas such as the criminal justice and the issues of behavioral health and criminal justice. We have Tara Wilds, who who was a former...
She used to run the jail.
That's right. Yeah. She was director
of... The biggest mental health center in town is the jail, unfortunately.
Exactly. And she's now current board president of NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Health, and is also doing consulting work in criminal justice. We also have Dr. Vicki Widowich, who is the director of the Partnership for Child Health. She will be discussing how addiction is affecting families, parents, and children who are using not only our healthcare system and the expense of those kinds of dollars, but also how it's impacting our foster care system.
There are so many tentacles to this. And as we keep talking about Mental Health Awareness Month and the opioid crisis in Florida and how they're connected, we want your calls, 549-2937. Give us a call. Let's go to Sean up in Yulee right now. Hi, Sean. Good morning.
Hey, how we doing?
All right, thanks. Thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks for having me. I just wanted to make a semantical point, really, about how one can make the argument that any addiction is a form of mental illness. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for that. And that's true. Thanks for that call.
Yes, that's very true. There are many kinds and elements that fall into addiction. We're specifically focusing on substance abuse, and trying to address those issues that relate to the opiate epidemic for this particular panel. But I don't discount what you're saying. What you're saying is very true.
And, you know, this is something that in Jacksonville, we're seeing a lot of work around your initiative, Remind Jax. There's a new pilot program that the city is putting some funding into through River Region Human Services and Gateway Services to treat people who are in the throes of opioid addiction. It's not as though the city isn't trying to respond. We see Pam Bondi suing the major drug manufacturers. The city of Jacksonville has also said it plans to sue the major drug manufacturers to hold them accountable for distributing these highly addictive medications without properly disclosing how damaging and how addictive and how deadly getting dependent on this kind of medication can be. And, you know, it's incredible when you think about the toll, the human toll that this has taken in our community alone. Marion Tischler, the former medical examiner in Jacksonville, she just stepped down after leading the local morgue. They literally cannot keep pace with the number of bodies that are coming into our morgue. Fire and rescue crews report that they can barely keep up with all of the calls that they are sent out on to respond to this crisis. People that are stroking out or about to overdose because of this crisis.
You have done an incredible research and job in bringing forward all of these issues, Melissa. I wanted to focus, and what we are trying to do is focus this particular panel to a population that will and can for themselves take some personal action as opposed to policy action. Mm-hmm. And I think what we want people to come away with is that misuse of drugs can be controlled, and it can be controlled at the individual level by using medications as directed, by talking to your doctor about non-addictive options for treatment. And this is a personal responsibility. These are questions to be asking your doctor. Although much education is being given to the medical community about how they prescribe today, they're even changing the extent or the number and quantity of opiate types of medications. But if there are options for your treatment, whether it be medication options or perhaps some alternative options, such as ways to introduce more physical exercise, things like yoga, into your daily life to help change the physical and chemical balance of how you're living your life. Another thing that relates to this is how medications are stored. Many people just keep their medications in a medicine cabinet, But if you have a, and you know you have a prescribed medication that is an opioid, it needs to be in a safe place that other people cannot access.
Particularly your kids, yeah.
Exactly.
It's 549-2937 as we talk about Mental Health Awareness Month, the opioid epidemic, and the new Remind Jacks initiative. Josh writes on our First Coast Connect Facebook page, reducing stigma attached to seeking help from a licensed mental health professional is what's needed. Certain groups still stigmatize mental health, and they discourage seeing a mental health professional. Brian tweets the show, the desperate needs so many have for mental health assistance needs to figure into our debate about healthcare costs. So I know you said you're really not in a position to change policy with this initiative, Marion. You're trying to change personal behavior and the way people think about these issues. But there are big policy questions tied to this topic. As we continue to talk about that, you're going to have a big event on May 29th that people can be part of. What's going to be happening?
Well, we will have a panel. As I was explaining earlier, the panel is going to include discussions around the criminal justice and behavioral health environment. Behavioral health meaning the way in which individuals become incarcerated, but also how they are released into their own care, perhaps without adequate support systems, and how important support systems are. I mentioned Dr. Vicki Widowich is going to be discussing the role of how addiction affects families and parents, children who are using health care and foster care, which are very expensive in terms of the back end of people becoming addicted and not being able to manage their personal situations. Susan Pittman is the executive director of Drug Free Duval and policy chair for the North Florida Opioid Heroin Task Force. And what she's going to provide is an overview of the demographics of the opiate epidemic in our region. We want to bring it home to Jacksonville and then to introduce the key prevention and intervention programs that are being implemented. One of them is what you alluded to earlier, Melissa, is the program called Project Save Lives. And Dr. Raymond Palm is the architect, shall we say, of this program.
Addiction Treatment and Recovery Program.
Exactly.
Right.
And he is going to be teamed up with Rico Bodine, who is the manager of the program at Gateway. He will be joining Dr. Palm to explain the importance of peer-to-peer relationships, how they are initiated and maintained. So what I think we're going to be hearing is how to begin to engage both the person who is experiencing the mental illness and looking at ways in which they can be effectively treated and how important relationships are to this treatment. And and in that process, to begin to look at the cost, and this is where policy hits the road, is when people begin to understand where it's important to invest policy dollars, so to speak, our tax dollars, in how we treat and have resources available to prevent people from going into the wrong method of institutionalization. We don't want them going into the juvenile, we don't want them going into the criminal justice system. We want people to stay outside of that system and be self-sustaining. And people with mental illness can be self-sustaining. They do not have to fall victim to their own illness. They can lead productive lives regardless of some of the challenges that they face internally.
Now, with all of this important information said, how can people be part of your event on the 29th and future ones too?
Well, we have the Remind event. We have a email address, remindjacks, that's R-E-M-I-N-D, jacks, at AOL.com. I can be called at a telephone number, 904-731-7887. You can leave your name and telephone number at the telephone address or send me an email, and I'd be happy to register you for the event.
Okay.
Again, it's at the Jacksonville Jewish Center on Crown Point Road.
Thanks for that. Remarian Tischler with Remind Jax. It is Mental Health Awareness Month, and there's something to talk about almost every day with this, not just in May. So, Marian, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you. I appreciate this opportunity so much.
And much more still ahead. Later, don't miss our tribute to the late Walter Whetstone, a look at his triumph of outdoor art in the city's La Villa neighborhood, the Whetstonian. But up next, Movable Feast clicks over to the growing website, Totally St. Augustine. We'll take a look right after this.
The Jax Chamber congratulates Mike Zaffaroni, their 2018 overall Small Business Leader of the Year and member of the North Council. Mike owns Liberty Landscape Supply with two Northeast Florida locations. More at myjaxchamber.com.
It's America's annual tradition to honor and remember all those who have served and sacrificed.
We remember to never forget.
The National Memorial Day Concert.
Join me, Joe Mantegna.
And me, Gary Sinise.
With Allison Janney, General Colin Powell, Charles Esten, Leona Lewis, Brian T., Cynthia Erivo, Megan Hilty, and Alfie Bowe. The National Memorial Day Concert.
Sunday night at 8 on WJCT Public Television.
What's up?
The WJCT HD4 pop-up jazz station is now on the air. The Jacksonville Jazz Festival is almost here, so swing out with jazz 24 hours a day on 89.9 HD4 until the jazz festival ends. Like what you hear? Send your comments to music at WJCT.org and enjoy the WJCT HD4 pop-up jazz station.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday nights at 9 for Turntable Tuesday, only at the Electro Lounge on 89.9, your community, your world, your music.
Support for Movable Feast is made possible by 927 Events, event venue and catering.
Welcome back. Well, it's the online portal for everything fresh and exciting happening in the nation's oldest city. In today's Movable Feast, our look at dining and entertainment trends around town, Lee Court of the Women's Food Alliance talks with Renee Unsworth, the creator of Totally St. Augustine.
Have a banana, Hannah. Try the salami, Tommy. Give it to gravy, Davy. Everybody eats when they come to my house.
Welcome, Renee Unsworth. I've been so anxious to have you on Movable Feast because your Totally St. Augustine has always fascinated me. How do you capture this historic city with 500 years of history on a daily basis with what you present?
Hello, Lee. Thank you so much for having me. Well, Totally St. Augustine is a website that I share living in St. Augustine. So I live there with my family and we experience it. And it's arts and entertainment, food, dining, living, parks, everything that you can experience in St. Augustine. And I have wonderful friends who support me and tell me what's going on when I may not be at a certain location at a certain time when something's happening. And of course, dining. I experience a lot of dining. I like dining out and, you know, checking out all the great restaurants because there is a big food scene in St. Augustine now.
I remember the first time I became familiar with Renee Unsworth, and you were doing almost a print version of what you're talking about with Totally St. Augustine online. You were the editor of Compass Magazine.
Right.
For many, many years.
Yes. Compass was an arts and entertainment magazine through the St. Augustine Record. So I did that for almost 10 years. And then I started this website after that. And it's very similar to it, but, you know, just has a lot more living, you know, in it that people can experience in St. Augustine, both tourists and residents.
Now, so many media people that I know, like yourself, enjoy communicating with either their children or somebody else's children, because children have such a unique perspective
right.
on what to do and where to go. Do your children inspire you?
Definitely. They have their hot spots that they like to go to.
How old are they?
8, 13, and 16. So
oh,
I have
you
a wide
have a,
spread.
Oh, I was going to say, you have a spectrum of life.
Yeah, so they all like to do different things, you know.
And the timeliness of what you do. You must be online 24/7 so you don't miss a thing.
Not so much. Like I said, I have a bunch of friends that do send me a text or send me an email or call me or send me a photo saying, did you hear about this? So, you know.
Now, do other cities have a Totally experience?
They
Is
do
there
not.
Totally Jacksonville, Totally Savannah, Totally
oh,
Miami?
Oh, my. That would be a lot. But maybe if someone wanted to that lived in that area, that would be great to expand that.
Yes.
What I feel like I bring to the table is that I live in St. Augustine, so I can show you how to experience St. Augustine through my eyes.
Tell us something interesting that's happening this summer, the first thing that comes to mind.
The St. Augustine Music Festival. It's a classical music festival that happens every June, and there are musicians from St. Augustine and Jacksonville that participate, and it's an amazing week of concerts in the cathedral. So beautiful, beautiful music.
And classical music in historic St. Augustine.
Yes.
That sounds wonderful.
In an amazing venue.
So cathedral. We can find you at totallystaugustine.com.
Mm-hmm. And of course on Facebook and Instagram. Those are the big ones that people like to contribute to. Hashtag totallystaugustine and I might feature your photo.
Okay, well, I hope that I'm going to be able to find the best walking shoes to enjoy the city this summer.
Yes, definitely wear some walking shoes or some flip-flops. I don't recommend heels around town.
Well, thank you, Totally St. Augustine, Renee Unsworth. Delightful to talk with you.
Thank you so much, Lee.
And we're going to be checking out what to do this summer in St. Augustine.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Everybody, when they come to my
Thanks, Lee. We'll be right back with a look at the legacy of the late Walter Whetstone and his triumph of outdoor art in the city, the Whetstonian. That's after this.
I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. From the State House to the Everglades to the Panhandle, Florida has a unique story.
So join us every Friday for the Florida Roundup.
And hear from newsmakers, journalists, and Floridians from all across the state.
About the issues that matter to you.
The Florida Roundup, Fridays at 1 on WJCT.
Hi, I'm WJCT News Director Jessica Palumbo. As you listen to 89.9, we want to make sure we're listening to you. What do you want to hear more of, less of? How do you listen most? On your radio? Streaming online? Help make sure WJCT stays relevant to you by taking our less than 10-minute audience survey. You can do it right now at WJCT.org. We're listening.
If a hurricane threatens our state, Florida's public radio stations have joined forces to ensure you receive important storm information. No matter where you are, you can stay informed on the radio, online, on social media, and on the mobile app Florida Storms. Timely weather information is always available from WJCT. The Florida Public Radio Emergency Network is supported by Citizens Property Insurance. Online at citizensfla.com.
Welcome back. Well, a few weeks ago, the state of Florida lost a treasure when a man named Walter Whetstone, the brilliant creator of a downtown spectacle known as the Whetstonian, passed away. Whetstone was 81 years old. And his complex in the La Villa neighborhood that takes up most of a city block is seen as a triumph of what's called outdoor art. If you've ever driven by the Whetstonian, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Now, Whetstone's legacy is one activists are fighting to preserve because the Whetstonian, as he dubbed it, is one of the few remaining pieces of the former thriving African-American neighborhood of La Villa. Author and Professor Tim Gilmore knew Whetstone, and he has written about his legacy, and he joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
It's good to see you. And here's our question to callers. Have you ever driven by the Whetstonian in downtown Jacksonville and wondered what it was? What are your questions about it? And what are your questions and thoughts about a neighborhood that's really almost gone forever? The memories of the old La Villa neighborhood in the city's urban core. If you're old enough to remember those days, we'd like you to call us and share your stories and memories of that era, too. So give us a call at 549-2937. So Walter Whetstone died earlier this month at the age of 81, and what an incredible guy he was. You've written about him several times. Tell us about him.
Well, you know, so like so many people, I had driven past the Whetstonian so many times at the corner of North Jefferson and State and Union Streets in Northern La Villa and wondered what in the world it was, you know.
Yeah,
I was
sure.
Always kind of mesmerized by it. And
it's like nothing else.
Oh, absolutely. It's like nothing else.
Let's describe it for people
sure.
that have never seen
yeah.
it.
So it is, as you said, most of a city block. I think the part that most people have, you know, can visualize in their minds is that Jefferson and Union, and it's an older brick building from the 1920s. There had actually been, I think, three separate businesses side by side in there at one point. And then the other corner is actually an old insurance company office. But Walter was a lifelong collector of strange and unusual artifacts. So the Whetstonian, it says the Whetstonian up at the top. Mm-hmm. And not only is it this beautiful old building, but it's got carousel horses on it. It's got old colored glass bottles that are made into part of the wall. There are wagon wheels and mannequin arms and piano innards against the wall and all kinds of musical instruments. There's a folk art sculpture of Harriet Tubman on one side of it. There are these big metal sheets that have quotes from architects Frank Lloyd Wright and Mies van der Rohe. It just goes on and on. It's, mm-hmm. You know, he collected and he also assembled. And I think of the Whetstonian as being a work of outsider art that is kind of a, you know, the art is the assemblage, the collage, the bricolage that he curated over 20 something years.
What
there.
Motivated him to create this place?
Well, so, you know, I remember walking up to it that first day and not knowing what it was. And Walter was sitting outside and it was July and he was wearing a button-up shirt and a tie, you know, and it was hot. And he said, "Oh, just go inside. You know, this is my place. Go inside." I said, "Are you sure?" You know, it's like, "Yeah, absolutely. Just go wander around, make yourself at home." And, you know,
it's a whole compound.
It's a whole compound. And I've heard so many other people tell similar stories. And he said his reason for the name was that if Smithson can have the Smithsonian, then Whetstone can have the Whetstonian.
That's right.
And that was really, that was his personality, too. He had this kind of sense of humor, and he was so kind and gracious and welcoming.
And he lived there a good bit of the time, didn't he?
Yeah.
Off and on?
Yeah. The Whetstones, they also have a place in Springfield. Dorothy Whetstone, his wife of 59 years. But he would stay at the Whetstonian itself sometimes. And I remember him telling me how he would sit up on top and watch the traffic, and listen to Otis Redding and stuff.
Right. And we're discussing the legacy of the late Walter Whetstone right now and his creation in downtown Jacksonville. It's called the Whetstonian. And if you have thoughts and questions about the old La Villa neighborhood that this compound represents, we want you to give us a call at 549-2937. Now, I was telling you right before we went on the air that I actually drive by the Whetstonian mm-hmm. every morning because we drive our younger daughter to school at the La Villa School of the Arts, mm-hmm. which is a block or two away from the Whetstonian. And of course, that school, La Villa, was named after this La Villa neighborhood, which used to be, people called it the Harlem of the South. It had nightclubs, it had restaurants, it had homes, it had this thriving, exciting culture that was mostly eliminated when the city leaders of the era decided that I-95 should cut right through it, and they decided to essentially push out this beautiful, thriving African-American neighborhood and culture from that area. And one day when I was driving our 12-year-old to school, she asked me about the Whetstonian. And she said, "Mom, what is that place? What is all that?"
Right.
And I described it the best that I could based on what I knew about it. And then I said to her, "See that sidewalk over there with the concrete, and there's just a few little blades of grass that are coming up in between the cracks in the sidewalk, and the grass still somehow finds a way to push through the concrete, even though most of it's been paved over." Mm. I said, to me, that's what the Whetstonian mm-hmm. is. It's this little sliver of that culture that somehow managed to survive in the La Villa neighborhood. It's this little tiny piece of what Walter Whetstone remembered and had grown up with and was trying to kind of keep alive. That's really how I see the Whetstonian.
I think that makes a lot of sense, you know. West Ashley Street, which used to go straight through La Villa School of the Arts, had clubs and restaurants and taverns all up and down it. And there's been a lot written about the different jazz and blues musicians who came through. And, of course, the Clara White Mission is still there on West Ashley Street. Interestingly, where La Villa School of the Arts is now, Stephen Crane's, author of Red Badge of Courage, his common law wife was a Madam Cora Crane, who had a bordello where La Villa School of the Arts is now. It was called the Hotel de Dream.
Really?
Yeah.
I won't share that with the 12-year-old, but that's interesting to know about.
And he wrote a short story, The Open Boat, there. But yeah, La Villa, I think the Harlem of the South thing, I think that goes back to maybe the 1980s. I don't think people called it that back in the day, but it is. I think there were a number of Harlems of the South around.
All over the country, sure. And this was a neighborhood that really had that spirit.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Let's go to some calls now as we talk about the Whetstonian and your memories of the old La Villa neighborhood. Johnny is in Washington Heights. Go ahead, Johnny. Good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to thank you for what you're doing on preserving the culture. I'm 42 years old, and I can remember as a kid walking with my grandparents down from the Blodgett Hall to Ashley Street, and they had just rows of like hat shops and shoe shops, and you do your Saturday and Sunday shopping, and they had daylights and stuff. So I think some of those things need to be highlighted, and the Ritz Theater also does a good job of highlighting that day.
Yes, it does. Thanks, Johnny. And if you've never been to the Ritz Theater, go, because not only do they have great live music and performances, they have a museum where you can learn about this neighborhood and learn about African-American history in Jacksonville.
Yeah, I think the Ritz preserves the narrative of the layers and layers of life and culture, that occurred in La Villa and in Jacksonville. It's a great Johnson Brothers exhibit there, and James Weldon Johnson was born nearby. you know, even the Clara White Mission itself, I mean, it was once the Globe Theater, and there were a number of Bessie Smith and a number of famous people came and played there.
Yeah. Lots of calls about the Whetstonian. Yolanda is in Springfield. Hi, Yolanda.
Hey, good morning, Melissa. And thanks for having this this conversation this morning. I just wanted to share that I met Walter and his wife in 2012. I was doing a drive-by looking for a mailbox because I'm doing a preservation. They were gracious enough to invite me in. You know, I went to the shop where he used to have a beauty salon there. Then he invited me in the house. And pretty much, Kim, I had the same experience as you. And during that 2 or 3 hour visit, they sat and he told me about his career with Globe Life and that how he was I forget what they call the like a runner, a message man. Person.
Yeah, for Western Union.
For Western Union, yeah.
Correct, Western Union, way back in the day, and he would just do the delivery at the Western Union at night, and he would or in the daytime and do insurance sales in the daytime, but also. Wanted to correct one thing. Harlem of the South goes back to the 1930s.
Does it? Okay.
Yeah. So,
okay.
Yeah, it goes back to the 1930s during the Zora Neale Hurston days. And there's actually still a few individuals around from that day that I know that could probably speak a little better about the Harlem of the South. And then they a lot of the music and the artists and authors, they went from here to Harlem. Back in the 30s and 40s.
That's right. Thanks, Yolanda. Yeah. Thank you for that. And we're going to keep talking about how there actually is a task force in the city to preserve this culture and efforts that I think you want to share about preserving the Whetstonian. Lots of calls, though. Let's take a few more. Keith in Riverside. Hi, Keith.
Good morning. I just wanted to say that I met Walter Whetstone several times. I had the same experience. He took me around his business, and I met him at a yard sale one day. He was quite an interesting guy. It'd be interesting to talk about some of the battles that he had in trying to maintain his facility down there. He had a lot to say, and there were lots of people that were trying to make him go away, make him disappear, and pretty much erase him from the landscape. And it'd be important to talk about that, too, because he was a good guy.
Yeah.
All right, thank you much.
Thank you, Keith. Yeah, that's why I kind of made that analogy to my daughter about the blades of grass fighting their way up through the concrete on a sidewalk because he barely was able to keep that place. Isn't that right?
I think when he purchased the place, when he moved into the place, most of La Villa was disappearing. Mayor Ed Austin's River City Renaissance plan took out, dozens of blocks of La Villa. When he moved in, I believe the sewage had already been cut and he had to, see about reinstating service. His graciousness and his kindness was always amazing to me. He told me once about winning a life insurance sales award and going to this conference where he would receive the award. And, I think this was, I'm not sure when exactly this was, but there was a white attendee at the conference who saw Walter and assumed that Walter should be someone who should take his luggage for him up to the room. And Walter didn't say anything. He took the luggage and he handed it to somebody else to take up. And then, later that evening, Walter is receiving this award and giving a speech. And, he could see the guy who had assumed that Walter was a porter or something earlier. And, the guy couldn't look up at him, but he was kind. He was gracious. He always had this light in his eyes.
And we're going to keep talking about the Whetstonian and take a few more of your calls. Stay on hold if you're waiting to talk. Right after this break, more about preserving this downtown gem and how you can help with that. Keep listening.
Hi.
House Republicans are headed for a confrontation on immigration that's pitting conservatives and moderates against each other.
The true challenge here is, can you get a compromise? Can you get a bipartisan bill? Can you get something not only to the Senate, but the Senate will take up and get signed into law?
The internal drama is testing the staying power of Speaker Paul Ryan and his heir apparent. That story this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Knowing that I wasn't going to be able to kiss my kids goodnight that night was like, it was an experience I don't wish on anybody, you know.
The story of a father swept up in immigration detention shows us that citizenship isn't always as easy to prove as it appears. I'm Tanzina Vega, and that's next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International.
Weekdays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Fresh Air, a feminist journey through the science and culture of pregnancy. We talk with journalist and mother Angela Garbus. In her new book, she writes about the incomplete research into the effects of alcohol on antidepressants on the fetus, what the placenta does, what's really in breast milk, and the anatomy that makes childbirth so difficult and painful. Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
A great pair of sneakers is as much about culture as it is about comfort. They're a consumer staple, a personal statement, and often a coveted object of desire. From the high end to the low end, from high tops to trainers, what makes a sneaker great? And what do they say about us? Next time on 1A. Weekdays at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Lots of calls about the late Walter Whetstone and his legacy in downtown Jacksonville, the Whetstonian. Let's go to Rick on the west side now. Hi, Rick. Thanks for holding. Good morning.
Good morning. I wanted to say first that I've driven past the Whetstonian many times and wondered what it was. Unfortunately, never took the time to find out, but it's a pleasure to drive past it. I also wanted to say that having been around Jacksonville when the Jaguars, when it was decided they should come, I often wonder what different kind of town we would live in if the hundreds of millions, perhaps even billions, that have been spent on the Jaguars, who almost never are able to sell all the seats that they have, if even a fraction of that money had been spent on the arts. I think Jacksonville would have been an arts mecca, you know, somewhere in between Miami and Atlanta, a draw through the Southeast. Look at the Florida Theater, the Times Union Center for Performing Arts, and other venues. They never have trouble selling out. The tickets are often gone within minutes of coming on sale.
Yeah. Thanks, Rick.
It would have been a different world.
Thanks, Rick.
I just don't see it happening, but could have been. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's go quickly to Tim in Atlantic Beach. Go ahead, Tim.
Good morning, Tim Gilmore. This is Tim Grew from across the street at UNF.
Hey, good. How are you?
Great. So I, too, found I actually saw your article about the Whetstonian on Facebook, and I found it absolutely entrancing because I'd driven by it, and I had no idea, but it was so beautiful. I wanted to talk just a little bit about the history of the LaVilla neighborhood.
We do not have a lot of time, Tim. Make it quick.
There were two LaVilla schools before LaVilla School of the Arts, and they dated back to the 1800s. And I was curious, there was a colored, it was called colored, excuse the language, it was called the LaVilla Colored School and the LaVilla White School. And I was wondering when those two were decommissioned,
yeah,
torn
sure.
down, and where they were located.
Yeah, and you know, this brings up an important point. So much of this history is not well known. We don't know the answers to some of these questions, which brings me back to the larger effort to preserve at least some of it. Tim Gilmore, how you have started a GoFundMe to preserve the Whetstonian. Here's a tweet from Michael. Walter Whetstone was one of Jacksonville's greatest artists. His place should be preserved and revered. Sandy tweets the show or emails the show. I pass that corner often and curious about what's inside. It looks like it should be a museum. So let's close now with your efforts to bring awareness about this and get this place preserved. What's happening?
Well, so I've A good friend of the Whetstones, Mara Wolfson Foster, who's a photographer and did some beautiful photography of the place and Walter and Dorothy through the years. She started the GoFundMe drive. If you go to GoFundMe and you search for Walter Whetstone or Whetstonian, you can find it. Also, I would recommend Sarah Clark Stewart and Lisa Reeves Dunn in Springfield did a short film where they interviewed the Whetstones, and this was just shown maybe a month or so ago. So if you go to YouTube and you search for Walter Whetstone, you should be able to find that, and that's a project they have ongoing called Springfield Stories. And you can also go to my website, which is jackspsychogeo.com. There's more than 400 different stories about places around Jacksonville there. And I wrote about the Whetstonian first in 2012, and then after Walter had had a couple of strokes, actually, in 2016.
And I'm looking at the GoFundMe.com Whetstonian page right now. It says support the Whetstones.
Yes.
They've already raised nearly half of their goal. So this money will be used to hopefully preserve the site. Is that correct?
You know, I hope so. It'll help the Whetstones in whatever they need. I think if people are interested in preserving the site, and I hope they are, then I think, you know, a citywide community initiative needs to happen, and it would need to happen in conjunction with the family and their desires.
Check it out online and drive by it, and let's hope that it can be saved. Thanks so much, Tim Gilmore, author and professor, for sharing this incredible story with us this morning. We appreciate you being here.
Thank you, Melissa.
And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chepchik. 1A's up next. In an era of school shootings, should students stay away from school? That conversation's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. If you're listening to our rebroadcast tonight at 8 p.m., just keep listening for some electro lounge music. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.